Always be true, so please love me do. Oh, love me do. Someone to love, somebody new, someone to love, someone like you. Love, love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please love me do. Oh, love me do. Love me do.
Now you're probably wondering, what in the world did he play that song for? It's just to kind of demonstrate how far music has come in my lifetime. Because that song was where I started. When that song came out, I didn't even play guitar. I'd never touched one, never thought about playing guitar, never thought about a recording studio or playing in Belgium. And everything changed after that. And that's three chords and about 30 words. So that shows you what the power of music is when it's really simple. Over my lifetime, though, it's grown more and more complex due to people like me who've made it that way. So now I'm going to show you what a song of mine sounds like and how different it can be than a three-chord song.
Beautiful things I can't
Adrian Blue Power Trio show. Yeah? Wow, thank you for coming back. I hope you didn't expect the same thing, because this is the one-man show in which I play pretty much all the things that I don't play with the Power Trio. So Power Trio will come back some other time, though. So what I like to do in this show is I like to play new things and things that I play by myself. And I also like to kind of converse with you, have you ask me questions, and see how clever I can be. But before we do that, I'm going to play you a brand new piece of music, and this piece of music has to do with something that always inspires me, which is technology. You may notice up here I'm playing through a computer. This is the latest technology that I'm using, that I'm talking about. Sometimes when I use technology, it inspires things, because I find things I couldn't have done before, couldn't possibly have done this piece of music 6 months ago. But since I've been working with new sounds and new techniques and discovering things, I wrote this piece of music. It's called Variations of Wave Pressure. It's so new that I haven't even had a chance to record it. Now, I feel like I'm 8 feet tall. Now you'll see why, because I'm going to sit down. They didn't want you to be just seeing the top of my bald head. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, if you pull the lights up a little bit, I'd still like to see these wonderful people. Hey, there you are. Usually around this time, I like to start having people ask questions, involve you guys a little bit. So I hope you've been thinking about that. Does anybody have a question? Just raise your hand. Don't be embarrassed. I'll raise mine first. Go ahead. Nobody has a question? Boy, this is going to be a quick show. Do I use a volume pedal on the output of my looper? Wow, what a question. That's a good question. No, I don't. I use a master volume pedal. That's this one right here. And I use a pedal over here that's called an expression pedal. You can do different things with. But I always have the looping set to the level that I want it to be. And if I make a loop and I want to fade it out, I can do that. Or if I want it to stop just exactly right, I can do that. But I don't have a pedal to operate. How about another question? Thank you. Ableton Live is a computer software program I'm running up here. It allows me, it's partially my mixer. It's partially my looper. In fact, you're asking about the looper. The looper that I found worked for all the functions that I needed is one called Mobius. And the beautiful thing about it, it's in the computer here, it was free. A free download. Wow, finally I get a free download. I also use it for a couple of the sample type things you can use computers for naturally, you know, sounds like trumpets and horns and things. I don't do that in this particular performance, but that's there. Also kind of to replace the keyboards I used to play guitar through. I used to have two keyboards here. The whole idea of this little rig over here was to shrink everything down so I could come around the world and play for you guys. Because it used to be every time I travel internationally, some of my equipment wouldn't show up, things wouldn't happen, there was too much stuff, and I felt like I wasn't able to always put on the show I wanted, so I invested a lot of time and effort and some money into shrinking things down. Now, these two racks here go on a plane pretty easily. Thankfully, they're here with us tonight. More questions, come on, somebody asked a question about
the concert in Netherlands.
What?
About the concert in Netherlands.
About the concert?
Yes, last week.
With the orchestra?
Yeah.
Oh, I could talk about that for a long time. For those of you who don't know, last week was a milestone in my life, something I've always wanted to do and never thought I could do, to play with an orchestra. Just me and this stuff you see here, playing with a full-fledged 52-piece orchestra, the Metropole Orchestra from Amsterdam. Fabulous orchestra. The piece of music was something that I worked on for 3 years. Mm-hmm. It's called E. It's okay, it didn't hit your shoe. And E is a 43-minute piece of music in 5 sections. And it's a bitch to play it, I'll tell you that. It's very difficult for me to play it, at least. So for about a year, I've been putting together this idea that we could play it with an orchestra. And I was really so pleased with their performance. I thought it was absolutely unbelievable. It was overwhelming, so powerful. To play on stage with 52 other musicians behind you is something people rarely get to experience. We recorded it in the studio as a record, which will be a CD eventually. And we also recorded the live show with a 5-camera shoot. So that'll be a DVD. It was at the Paradiso. I'm sure you know that venue. It's one of the best in the world.
Yeah, right.
And it was incredible. And the other thing that was kind of interesting about it, as I mentioned, it's a pretty difficult piece of music in 5 sections, 43 minutes long. Never in its life had it ever been played from beginning to end by anyone. And all through the week that we rehearsed it in various forms, we always did one section here, a little section there, the conductor would take another section, we'd work on that. We never actually got to the point of playing it from beginning to end until the show, Sunday night. And that was the first and only time it's ever been done. I'm proud of that. Oh, you're going to love it when you hear it. It's way better than I thought it was going to be. Way better. I'll play one section of it for you later, but of course without the orchestra. Any questions about all those famous people I've worked with? Somebody has to have one of those.
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay.
How fast can you make, when I ask you now, play the rhino song, the elephant?
How fast can I play a rhino song?
No, how fast do you have it under touch?
I can probably do it right now.
Thank you.
It wasn't planned, but there it is.
So it's just in you, yeah.
It's actually more of a hand technique than any particular gadget up here. If you take your fingers and you make a cluster of the strings, so there is no real note, there's no real tonality, you're not playing a harmony, and if you pull those strings together at the same time that you bring in your volume.
And you do it with a cleaner sound, so you'll see what I'm saying here. Sound. Do I have a clean sound anymore? I don't know. Yeah, here you go. See, what I'm doing is... See how you... There's no
actual tone there.
Okay, thank you.
That's the basic trick to it. I've talked to a lot of rhinos about it. They say it's pretty close.
They're pretty happy with it.
How about another question or two? Then I'll play. When you get tired of the questions, just throw something at me. How about you, sir?
How was it to play with Frank Zappa?
How was it to play with Frank Zappa? That was probably the most crucial year of my life. Frank discovered me playing in a small bar in Nashville, Tennessee. I was completely unknown, very poor, struggling along, trying to make music. I was in a cover band. We played some good songs, but we were not a band that was going anywhere or going to make any records or anything. Frank had a show in town. He came in after the show. He wanted something to do. He had a chauffeur driver. The chauffeur driver said, you should go see this band. It's my favorite band. He brought Frank in. Frank listened to us play for 40 minutes, came up, shook my hand from the stage, just like that, while I was playing Gimme Shelter. And then he said, I'll get your name and number from the chauffeur driver, and I want to audition you in a few months when my tour is over. Well, nothing happened for about 6 months, and I figured that was just, just one of those things. It was just a dream. When all of a sudden, one day, Frank Zappa called, and he gave me quite a list of things to try to figure out. Now, Frank never hired musicians, really, rarely ever hired musicians who don't read music. I am totally self-taught. I don't know how to read music at all. So that was kind of rare for him. So what we did is this. We did the audition. I passed the audition out of 50 guitar players, but still I was not a reader. All the other guys in the band got sheets of music. We started these rehearsals. The rehearsals lasted for 3 months. From Monday through Friday, 8-10 hours a day, we would rehearse. And because I didn't read the music, here's what Frank would do. On Friday night at the end of rehearsals, I would get in his car and I would go home with him. And I would stay at his house over the weekend, and he would start showing me all the things that were coming up the next week. So on Monday morning, when I walked in, the other guys got sheets of paper to read. I had already kind of started memorizing the things, and I might know a little bit about it by then. So that's how that worked, which probably begs the question, what was it like to live with Frank Zappa every weekend for 3 months, right? Well, if you don't mind, I'll tell you my favorite story, which happened the first weekend that I went to the Zappa's house. Frank and I were sitting upstairs in his living room on a purple couch that he had, talking about stuff, and all of a sudden, his son came riding in the living room on a red tricycle, riding around on like this weasel, I think. And Dweezil had, he was 5 years old, and he had this beautiful spit curl hair, beautiful curls, kind of hair that I dream about. Nice. And he was driving around, and I said to Frank, boy, that's a beautiful girl you have there, Frank. And Dweezil rode his tricycle right in front of me and said, fuck you! Age 5, remember. So that's the Zappa family. You get used to it. One more question or two, maybe? And
same experience 2 years ago, opening for Dweezil? No.
No, wasn't the same experience opening with Dweezil. That was a big festival up in Canada. What happened though is they sent a message to me saying, would you like to sit in with us? Well, we didn't have time to do that. We didn't have time to rehearse anything or have a sound check or anything. So I said, well, I know what I could do. I could come out and do the Bob Dylan imitation that I used to do with Frank on the song called Flakes.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. There was 5,000 people there. I walked out, somebody gave me a harmonica. I walked out, I did the Bob Dylan imitation. I walked off. I never even met Dweezil. I still haven't met him. still haven't met him or his band, but I went out and played with him for that song. And it was great. The thing that was so cool about it was, Dweezil was over here, exactly where Frank would have been in my life. And he looks so much like Frank and talks like him, that it was kind of, for a moment, I felt like I was back there in that time with Frank Zappa again. It was really kind of made me feel funny, transcendent, I suppose.
Yeah. Another on Frank Zappa.
Another on Frank Zappa.
It's International Women's Day or something like that today. And if you hear speeches of him about feminine movement, the only movement, what was, was he hated by feminists?
Was he hated by who?
Feminists. Or,
families?
Feminists.
Feminists! Oh. Yeah. I don't know. He had a wife. She didn't hate him. I don't think so. I don't think feminists had a problem with Frank. I'm not sure. He offended just about everybody, I think, equally. He said things that a lot of different people didn't like, but that was the thing I liked about Frank. He spoke his mind, whether you agreed with him or not. And really, what I liked is, of course, that he was such a brilliant musician and a brilliant person. So I had that one year in my life where he showed me so many things, and that was a very special time for me. I guess I'll go play some more music for you now. Think about those questions, though. We'll have some more in a few minutes, okay?
Feels like an oven up here, by the way.
If you guys could take a few of those rocks off the sauna, that would help.
That's good. I like it when they have the lights on. That's much better.
question?
Yes.
Yes?
How different was it for you working with Frank Zappa and then changing to David Bowie?
Yes. You want to know how that happened, or?
It happened in Berlin as a threat.
Yes, it did.
True?
What happened was...
How different was it from being a French band with such a leader as Frank Zappa and then with David Bowie?
Okay, I'll try to answer all of that in one little paragraph or two. What happened was Frank and I were playing in Germany, and we played one night in Cologne, and Brian Eno was in the audience. And Brian Eno knew that Frank Zappa was looking, David Bowie was looking for a new guitar player. So he called David and said, you should go see Frank Zappa, he's got a guitar player you might like. So the next night was Berlin, David Bowie came to the show, and there was a part of the show where Frank played a long guitar solo with just the bass player and the drummer. Everyone else in the band usually left, walked off stage for a while. Oh, I walked off stage, but I saw over by the monitor mixer, over there, I saw David Bowie and Iggy Pop standing there. So, wow. So I walked over and I shook David's hand and I said, I just want to say thank you for all the music you've made because it's meant a lot to me, I'm a big fan. He said, great, how'd you like to be in my band? I said, well, I'm playing with the guy out there on stage right now, if you don't mind. But so it worked out that my ending with Frank came at about the same time that David Bowie's tour started. So I joined David's band and went around the world yet again, just like I had done with David. I think the big difference was, of course there's big musical differences, but for me personally, David Bowie needed some different things from me than Frank Zappa needed. Frank Zappa needed a guy who could play all of Frank's guitar parts when he was singing, or who could sing when Frank was playing, because Frank didn't play and sing at the same time. He did one or the other. So when he was singing, I would play his guitar parts. When he was playing, I would sing. With David, it was different. He didn't need much of a singer, although I did sing. What he needed was a stunt guitarist, someone who could play lots of solos and make lots of sounds. So I learned a whole lot of things from Frank, and then I was kind of ready to be set free with David and just go wild. And that's kind of what happened. And that's what happened. Even after that, I was playing with David Bowie in Madison Square Gardens, and in the front row was a band called Talking Heads. And they heard me, and they said, we want that guy. So the dots just kind of connected one after another. Then I was in a nightclub called The Bottom Line in New York City with David Bowie one night, seeing a concert, and when the lights came up at the table over there, he said, oh, that's Robert Fripp sitting over there. I said, wow, I love King Crimson. I never even knew what Robert Fripp looked like. Well, maybe I'll go say hi to him. So I went over and said, hi, Robert, I'm Adrian Blue. I'm playing with David. Oh, yes, I know who you are. Oh, fabulous. Here, let me write my number on your arm. Please call me. We'll have coffee. Okay. So his number was on my arm for 3 days, couldn't wash it off, so I figured I'd go have some tea and coffee with him, and that's how it started, the ball rolling towards getting in King Crimson, which of course has been 30 years now, on and off relationship with Robert.
But Robert is not in the audience tonight. Any chance to see you guys play again together?
Well, at this point, that's pretty much up to what Robert wants to do. I'd let him know that if he wants to do more, of course I'm ready, I would love to do more. He wants to take a break right now, evidently. Maybe he'll come back and say, let's do some more, maybe not, I don't know. He's old, I'm young, so he's sleeping right now, probably. Seriously, I love Robert, I'd love to do more stuff with Crimson, but it really is up to him because obviously I wouldn't do King Crimson without Robert. He's, he's the focus point, visionary of the band. So we'll see what he wants to do. Yes? Tony Levin is an incredible musician. He can play with anybody and pretty much has played with everybody. He's a guy that makes you feel very comfortable to be around him. He's a very interesting person, very smart, knows a lot of things, has traveled the world even more than I have. Fabulous musician, and just a real sweet guy. You know, he likes to tell fun stories, and he likes to hang out and have dinner. And you know, I mean, everybody that works with Tony loves Tony. So he's an easy guy to work with. As far as his playing, the stick, well, I've never seen anybody play like he does. So when I saw him play the stick the first time, I said, I don't know what that is, but I don't ever want to touch it because he's already doing it so good. And, you know, he just kind of brings that to the table whenever you work with him on whatever project. He's truly professional, makes everybody kind of rise up a little bit. So I love Tony. I'm going to do a band camp with Tony Levin. You won't, probably won't attend because it's in New York. It's in the countryside of New York, actually, in the Catskill Mountains in August. Tony and Pat Mastellotto, the drummer, and myself are doing what's called a band camp. That's where, if you wanted to, you could pay money and come and stay for 5 nights in a sort of a resort area where we spend all day showing you things and talking with you and having drinks at night over a campfire. We burn up a couple sticks in the fire or whatever, you know. Not Chapman sticks. And, you know, it's going to be a pretty fun event. We haven't ever done it before, but other people have, and they've said it's really rewarding for everyone who does it. So I'm looking forward to it.
As a multi-instrumentist, how does it feel to make a record with Les Claypool on bass and Danny Carey on drums?
Well, Les Claypool and Danny Carey are two of my favorite musicians also, along with Tony Levin. I have a lot of players that I like. At that time I was writing new music that I knew was eventually to be for Power Trio format. Power Trio meaning, you know, musicians who can really play a lot and fill up a lot of space. I couldn't find the right Power Trio, but I thought, well, I want to make a record now anyway. So I kind of said, you know, well, who could I get? Well, I called Les Claypool. I knew he was a big fan. He had talked to me many times at King Crimson concerts. And I knew that Danny Carey was a fan because Tool and King Crimson had played some shows together. So when I talked to Les, he said, well, who would we have as a drummer? I said, what do you think? He said, Danny Carey. I said, that's who I was thinking. So that made it simple. It was great. I love playing with those guys. But I kind of knew going into it that they wouldn't be my trio because they're so busy.
Yeah.
They can't really do that. So it was a few years before I actually found two young musicians who were 19 years old and really kind of blew my mind. Eric and Julie, who I had here for the first couple of years. Last time I was here, I had a new drummer, Marco Miniman. He's like 10 drummers, so I love all those guys. Yeah, great. Okay, one more question, and maybe I'll go to this piece I was talking about from E. Who's got a question? Anybody?
Will you make a camp in Europe? Will I make a camp in Europe?
That's a good question. They have been talking about doing one. If not this year, maybe next year. And I hope they do that. I'd really love to do that. I think it's you know, first I want to see how this one works out, but I have a feeling it's going to be really great because we're going to share all of our knowledge and just try to be really, you know, open with all the people, and they're going to hang out with us, and I think it's going to be great. I hope we do one in Europe. Now I'm going to play one of the sections of E, the thing that I did with the orchestra. This will sound pretty different because it's just me, and I'm going to make some loops in places where the orchestra might have played. And this is the fourth section called D. Thank you. can't wait for you to hear that with the orchestra. Maybe I'll play a song now. This is a song I never get to play in the Power Trio or other places, but it'll be
question.
Fun.
Question. Yes, it sounds very complicated. Can you please play another Beatles song? Just kidding.
This one's kind of that. It's Beatlesque, I think.
Not as complicated as that.
Thank you.
till the end of time. Even if the sun won't shine or the money runs dry,
Adrian Ballou signature model. Of course, it's my favorite guitar. This is a Parker Fly, but it's my own model of the Parker Fly. It has some electronic modifications, really. Everything about the guitar is exactly as Ken Parker designed it, except for a few state-of-the-art things that I put in at the last minute. To me, it's the most incredible guitar in the world. It weighs 4 pounds. The neck is so thin, it's beautiful, it plays unbelievable. Stays perfectly in tune all the time, even though I feel crazy with this tremolo arm. And in my opinion, it's the Ferrari of electric guitars. So I'm really, really proud to have my name on this guitar. And it costs a lot of money, but I think it's very much worth it, because when do you get a guitar that has perfect intonation, weighs 4 pounds, stays perfectly in tune, It has MIDI, so you can play through computers or keyboards or anything like that. It has a sustaining pickup. It has a Variax, and the Variax is, if you don't know this technology, it can sound like 25 different guitars, including Fenders, Gibsons, Rickenbackers, Gretsch. It can sound like 12 strings. It can sound like a sitar, a banjo, all in this little knob right here. So those are some of the electronic changes that I made to the guitar. We put custom car finishes. They're 12-stage car finishes on these, and they actually spin them dry to dry the paint. So it's pretty high tech, the whole thing is. In fact, you couldn't have a guitar weigh 4 pounds and have a neck this thin, except for one thing. The guy who invented it came up with this idea. When they're making the guitar, they put a thin coating on the back of some kind of carbon epoxy. And then they take the guitar body and they put it in an oven. And they actually bake this guitar. When they do that, the carbon epoxy sinks into the wood and makes the tensile strength of the wood 10,000 times stronger. So that's why this neck never changes, no matter what the weather things are, or intonation or anything else. That's why it stays perfectly in tune. You can actually stand on this neck, and it won't hurt the guitar at all. I do it all the time. I stay at home. It's not true. I'm lying. So anyway, I'm really, really pleased with this. I've got, as you can see, a couple different colors of it. And I have about 40, 50 guitars in my collection at home that I've gathered through the years. And they all have character about them that I like. And they all do different things. And I like all those guitars. And but if I had to just choose one, this guitar does everything for me. I have five of them, I think, now. Yeah. And I play them all at once. Who has a question?
I have a question about you.
You're a curious young man, aren't you?
It's one of your last songs. How different is the process of composing such a wonderful piece as the last piece you played and creating a picture to draw on your covers or something?
Well, you know, all the stuff like that song is All Her Love Is Mine, and you're asking about the paintings that I do. Those are kind of my own personal art. You know, they come from my own heart. They're the things that I do that I don't offer up to other people. They're not right for King Crimson. They're not right for other ventures that I do. These are songs that are personal. So when I'm putting together music that I want to do of my own, make my own solo albums, I try to make as personal a record as I can. I try to play everything on the record even if I can. Most times, and I try to, you know, do the artwork and paintings and things so that you guys get a better, clear picture of what I'm trying to do with my own art. And you know, other times it's a collaboration, like King Crimson, in which times, you know, you put aside your own thing and you collaborate with someone else, and you listen to their ideas and their thoughts, and you incorporate all that stuff. So. I have several different, you know, avenues to travel. I have this wonderful power trio. I have King Crimson when it wakes up. And I even have a pop band called The Bears that plays together every 5 years. And then, you know, I do my solo records. And now maybe I'm going to play with an orchestra from now on, every now and then, I hope. Yes, and I've had other bands too, you know. Of course, all the ones we've talked about tonight, they've all been great. Great experiences.
Music, but one of the most beautiful solos you ever played, in my opinion, I'm outing myself, is the synthesized guitar solo on the Crash Test Dummies album.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
I'm not a musician, I'm a guitar player.
Well, you know, it's not about being complicated or simple. When I started with Love Me Do, I wasn't trying to say that Love Me Do is not great because it's simple. I was trying to show that look how far the journey has been for me. I started playing that music and I've ended up playing this crazy music. And it's my own personal journey, but if you want to know the truth, if I could write Love Me Do, I would. Because I think it's great. I love simple music. I love simple thoughts, ideas. I love art that just speaks right to you.
It's just that my mind doesn't seem to do that very easily. I always complicate things. It's just my style. So, but I do play simple things too, and I enjoy that. You know, I think all music has validity if it's for real. And the music that's not for real is the music that's imitated by so many other people. A lot of times in music, what happens to me is you have this top 10% of the people who are actually creating something new in any field of music, jazz or country music or rock and roll or whatever, and then you have about 90% of people who are just copying what they copied, what they did. So I like the top 10%. One more question, maybe. I think that's about all I've got for you tonight. I really appreciate that you've come out here. I know it's a Tuesday night, and you guys are great to play for. I wish I could play all night for you. So does anyone have one more thing they'd like to ask? I can't play any Frank Zappa songs anymore. I've forgotten every one of them. That was 30 years ago. City of tiny lights. City of tiny lights. That's all I can do. Okay, well, if not, I'll play one more song. Thank you all so much for coming. Come back to see us when we bring the Power Trio next time. And you've been great. Thank you. Thank you.
Spaß gemacht, hat sich gelohnt, finde ich. Ja.